Okay. This is episode, I think this is episode 14. I'm not sure, of On Drums. My name is John Simeone. Today I have my first guest singer ever on the podcast. Ben Phillip is here to say hi. Say hi.
Hello.
Ben.
The first thing I have to say, John, is you got a friend in me.
Okay, there you go. See, he's a singer.
You got a friend in me.
And here's the thing. He was on time for the podcast. We were making fun of singers who show up late all the time. But no, you're not one of those guys.
Never.
No,
I'm always early.
No. So you know, Ben and I, we know each other from...
Coletti.
Right. So when was that? I'm trying to get these years straight.
You know, the funny thing is I was trying to remember all the things I've done in my life.
Yeah.
And I'm writing down all the musical things. Coletti was in the early 2000s. I was working with Steve Klein with the 2020 band.
Uh-huh.
Fabulous band. And I got to know Gus, you know, because of showcasing. We were showcasing for Gus.
So you guys were showcasing?
We were showcasing
for Gus. All right, so just to clarify, Gus was not only a band leader, he was also, he had an office with people who worked in the office. Okay,
right. So I was showcasing, you know, through Gus with Steve Klein. And I got to know Gus, and I got to observe him on stage. And as far as I was concerned, he was the best front man that I've ever worked with.
He was good. Yeah.
Because he had a philosophy, and he talked to me. I say, wow, Gus, I'm really, like, impressed with you. First of all, the guy could sing in Italian. He could do Dean Martin. He could do Tom Jones. Fabulous, good-looking, tall man. But beyond that, he had this thing where he would bring the audience in. He said, Benny, listen, this is the thing. You know, nobody wants to see a guy up there who's acting like he's better than everybody in the room.
Gus said that.
He told me that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, right. But he told me the thing you have to do, you have to embrace the audience. So like you're someone at the party. You want to bring them in.
Yeah.
You want to bring them in. And then they're going to like you more personally, and they'll actually listen to you. So I learned a lot from him. Yeah. He was really one of the guys that really set me straight with the singing thing. I learned a tremendous amount. But in any event, getting back to what you said, I met you.
Wait, but so
2002, 2003.
Was it 2002?
2003, something like
so,
that.
So refresh my memory now. I think, so you were in the band with Gus.
Yep.
Who else was in the band?
John Hipps, Sal Randazzo. Richie Scolo. Then we'd have guys like Bobby Brace. We'd have
who played guitar?
We started with
Don Catrone and Gus's band.
No, wasn't him, right?
No, Chris Carberry.
Chris Carberry.
Yeah. Okay,
right. Donnie was with a different thing I was doing.
Right,
but so it was Chris Carberry. And the band was fabulous. I had just replaced Jimmy Cherry.
That's what it was.
Now, the thing about Jimmy Cherry is I knew Jimmy when I was about 13 years old. And he was in a local band in Belmore. I grew up in Belmore. He had a band in Belmore. They should have been famous. These guys were so outstanding.
He was a great singer. When I heard
his voice, how can people? I was like,
he was great.
So
just a story about Jim Cherry, because Richie Scola used to break Jim Cherry's balls all the time,
right?
Because Jim Cherry was a phenomenal singer, R&B guy, right?
Phenomenal.
He was about 5'3",
little man, yes,
and he looked like an accountant,
yes.
So Richie Scola used to say, When you got on line for voices, you got on the wrong line. You should have been on the account line. You got on the R&B line, and that's why your voice doesn't match what you look like.
But such a
so okay.
Talent.
So now I remember you replaced Jim Cherry.
Jim Cherry,
right? Okay, got it.
And
then I left the band shortly after that.
The funny thing, I remember the thing is, I remember when you left the band, and in fact, you had approached me. You said, you know, Sean from Code Blue.
Yeah.
He said, Sean, you know, likes the way you sing. If you want to, you know, if you want to audition, because at the time he was moving things around in that band. And I said, John, I got to be honest with you. Even though Gus's gigs went down from 125
to about 60,
what you said. Say, Ben, he's only doing like 60 gigs. But I was working in the city. You know, I have a gig. I'm still working, but I work from home now. So I had a gig in the city, and, you know, the 70 jobs that I was doing was perfectly fine for me. I didn't want to go because I know Sean was doing like 130 gigs.
About 140 when I joined.
So I was like, the band is fabulous, and Sean is a monster guitar player and a really nice mm-hmm. guy, because I knew him. I said, I can't handle
that many gigs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know, he loved you, and you went, and you worked with him
15 years
time.
I did that band. That right. was the last club that band I was in, was Sean's band.
Right.
And I've been out about, I want to say 10 years
yeah, they're now. Still, I think they're still booking.
They're not doing that volume anymore, right. but they're still, yeah, because yeah. Dave is in the band still, Dave Anton.
Wow.
Who I just got off the phone
wow.
with. Yeah.
Yeah, so I stayed with Gus, and then unfortunately, as we were speaking about before, he died in August of 2008.
2008.
And you know, I had to actually look it up because I wanted to have some information in my head for today.
Yeah.
Because I would have said, oh yeah, he died really in 2017. I really,
you know, yeah, you know what? Dude, that makes sense because I bought this house in 2007. I guess I was just, yeah. That's before I had kids. Yeah, I remember. Now I remember, yeah.
And that was the last time I saw you was at his was at his funeral, mm-hmm. and which was very sad. Little Gus was there and Denise, and you know, that was a terrible, terrible day.
Yeah.
But that's when, anyway, I worked with you for about 3 years with Coletti.
Was it 3 years?
About 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the Coletti band that to this day blows me away was all the people we met, like Armstrong, Neil Armstrong, who was the astronaut.
Uh-huh.
Baldwin, you know, Baldwin, the mom was there. Chuck Schumer.
We did a couple of gigs with what's his face sat in. I forget the old time singer sat in. He didn't like Hips as what output Hips was playing.
Oh.
I forget. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
You want to hear a funny story about John Hips?
Okay, so just preface.
Yeah,
John Hips is the keyboard player in Gus's band,
right?
Who was a phenomenal
genius.
Really. He really was just great. And
he didn't have any pigment in his
skin. He was very white. In fact, we used to say he looked like he was dead.
But you know what you did one day?
Didn't we? Well, I used to make fun of him that he was dead.
We were all sitting around. You know, Gus. Well, the one thing Gus did.
He could be dead at this point. I hope he's not dead.
God forbid. The one thing that Gus always made sure was that we'd have a table and we ate.
Yeah.
I remember one time we didn't have a table. I'm taking. We're going. We're going. No, they set us up right away. But in any event, we were all sitting around the table. And you picked up a candlestick, and you put it next to John's arm.
Yeah.
And everybody.
Just to see if he would burn.
And everybody just, like, was
John was crying. So, he was so white. And Gus's band was all Italian guys.
All Italian.
So John, but Gus would introduce the band at the end of the night. He'd go, on drums, John Simeone, Sal Rendazzo, Tommy Rocco, Denise Guerval. And then he'd get to Hips, and he'd go, and on keyboards, Giovanni Hippo.
Now, let me tell you a funny Gus, John Hips story.
Yep.
You know, these gigs, we had these big gigs for all these, you know, important
corporate
people.
Gigs, yeah, I remember.
A lot of corporate things. So one time, Gus had to sing, God Bless America. So Hips started out.
What somebody sat in, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but then Gus had to sing one of those songs. It might have been God Bless America or one of those tunes. So Hips started out in a really high key. So by the end of the song, Gus was like, and he had lays around his neck, you know, the Hawaiian lays.
Yeah.
So, and he was screaming, and we were all literally hiding our faces because he was screaming because he couldn't hit the notes. The notes were like alto. At the end of the song, Gus ripped the lays off his neck, threw him
I don't remember that.
And yeah, you son of a, he threw the lay. It was hysterical.
I remember something like that when Chris always brings up a story like that, that somebody started on the wrong key, and by the end of the song, Gus was screaming.
That was probably it.
Yeah, I think that was Huntington Townhouse.
Now, Chris is another guy. Whenever we broke, I had to sit somewhere else because he liked to go into your plate and grab.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He, all of a sudden, I'm sitting there. The first time I met him, all of a sudden, I see his fork. Boom.
There were gigs. I got Chris's a fork with an extension on it, so he could just get to eat off everybody's plate. But there was a gig. I remember we had. Denise said to us, "Listen, this gig tomorrow night, we're not eating on the gig. Don't go in the cocktail hour. Just bring up a sandwich. It's a weird thing. We're not eating."
Right.
So we get to the gig, and Chris walks in, and he's chewing. And I see her eyes open wide. She looks at me. She goes, "Please tell me." He did not go through it. And he walks in and he goes, hey, you got to see the shrimp in the cocktail hour, man. It's unbelievable. He did. He walked right through and he ate.
Yeah, I remember a guy, a big guy who used to be a trumpet player. He passed away.
You know, I know. Joey. Zamini. Joe Zamini, yeah.
One time he positioned himself in front of the, you know, they had the big shrimp tables.
Yeah.
And he had a toothpick.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it before. It was like a cartoon. Bing, yep, bing, yep, bing, bing. Yep. He ate a whole row of shrimp. And the caterer came over to, I don't remember who it was, but it might have been Steve Klein. He said, would you get this?
Yeah, Joe
ate all the shrimp.
Joe could eat your house.
He ate all the, you got it. He can't do that. He was standing there for bing, bing, bing.
So you know what, Benny? Give me some of your. I looked at your website. The you know,
Ben Phillips. Guys out there, if you want to know who I am, if you don't remember me, look up Ben B-E-N Phillip, P-H-I-L-L-I-P music. Ben Phillip music. I have all my stuff there. Anyway, you
got some people on there. You've done some work with.
Well, I worked with Phil Grande, who was in the Joe Cocker band. And by the way, I met him through Timmy Lawless. Because I had been subbing with a band Timmy was in at the time called a Milestone. It was one of these big power bands.
Oh, like, I remember that band.
Big power bands with four lead singers.
Yep.
And everyone in the band was an amazing musician. Steve Briarty guitar.
Steve moved away, you know. I hate him for that. He moved to like South Carolina, so I don't know where he moved.
The horn player was Marty Kersich.
I know Marty.
Let's see, who else was in that band? Steve Klein was on drums.
Steve did one of my podcasts.
Yeah, I know. He was great. He was a great drummer. Yeah. Great drummer.
Steve's one of the few drummers I can tolerate.
Richie Miranda. Richie Miranda. I met him. That's how I met Richie Miranda. He was on keys. Who else was in the band? Anyway, Timmy, what had happened was Phil reached out to Timmy because he's a name guy and an absolutely phenomenal vocal. I love Timmy. He reached out to Timmy because he had written a bunch of songs. And he said, Timmy, I'd like you to listen to these songs and you know, sing them for me. So we listened to them, and all of a sudden, like about a month later, Timmy called me up, and he said, hey, Ben, listen, there's this phenomenal guitarist who used to work with Joe Cocker. His name is Phil Grande, and he wrote a bunch of songs, but I got to be honest with you, man, they're really not my bag, but I think you would be good for these songs. I said, oh, man, thank you so much. So then I got together with Phil, and I recorded a bunch of songs, and I ended up having bands with him because he had a manager. And his manager said, listen, Ben, you guys sound great. Phil likes you. He goes, why don't you put a band together? So we ended up putting a band together, and we did all like the Nautical Mile and all those different places with Phil. Unfortunately, he passed away too. But it was an experience working with a guy like that. And I met Joe Cocker through Phil.
Right.
Which was mind-blowing because Joe was one of my... one of my heroes, and he took me backstage, and I met Joe, and it was funny because Phil goes, "Wow, Joe, Benny's a good singer," and Joe goes, "Well, I could see he's a pretty big guy too, you know." And I'm looking at him like, "Okay, the fat thing again? Come on, Joe." But I said, "Joe, thank you so much. I love you, man. You're my hero." And they said, "No, Benny, I'm only kidding with you, mate. You know what I'm saying." So I met him. Phil was an amazing guy. The first time I heard Phil play guitar, I was like, no, can't be. So I worked with him. I worked with this band, Noize, for a while, N-O-I-Z, which was a funk, phenomenal funk band. And they would have guys coming in, like from Kool & the Gang, Tower of Power. Like all these touring guys would sit in with this band. Mm-hmm. And she paid me, her name is Tanya Smith, she paid me more than anyone has ever paid me in the business.
Right, so you just interject here. You got an R&B thing going on. You're an R&B, right? I mean, I remember.
You know what it is?
You have a soulful voice. That's what I mean to say.
Well, I was always hired as that guy.
The guy.
I was always hired by the guy to sing the rock and roll and to sing the R&B. But I also can sing the Sinatra stuff well, too. But the thing was with me, I just evolved. Like, I started singing this. I remember the first club date band I was ever in was the Tony Curcio Orchestra.
Oh, Tony Curcio.
And great drummer. Great big band drummer, especially. Mm-hmm. So I remember I auditioned. I had the, whatever, guts to call. Because I heard about club dates, right? Because I was doing all rock and roll gigs at the time. I was working crazy doing rock 6 nights a week. you know, making $40
clubs,
making whatever I was making.
That's what I'm doing now. Like, it's terrible.
It was no money. Yeah. So a friend of mine, Evan Gould, who's a great keyboard player and a songwriter, at the time had evolved, and he was doing club dates. So he goes, Ben, why don't we do club dates? I said, what is a club date? I never heard the word. I said,
what do they call it? It's not a club at all.
No.
And it's not anything like a date.
I said, what is it? He says, well, God, it's a gig where you do restaurants and weddings. And
it's really weddings. High-end. Out here, club dates refers to weddings. Weddings or bar mitzvahs, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I didn't know.
High-end.
So he kind of educated me with the term. I said, well, what's the deal? And then he told me what the pay was. And I was like, ooh.
That's,
it was at least double.
There you go.
So I started working with him. And eventually, he went off to school. He became an accountant, a CPA. He was working for Rolling Stone. He had a whole different career going on. So I'm sitting there, and I want to get into a club date band. Mm-hmm. So I opened up the phone book. They had phone books back in the day, right?
Phone books.
So I opened up
What's a phone book? For those of you young kids listening, that was a book with phone numbers in it.
Right. So I opened it up. I'm looking under orchestras. And the first one that comes out is Tony Curcio Orchestras.
Right, which is not, it's not an orchestra at all.
No, at all.
It's not even close to an orchestra.
Right, it's a band.
Right.
So I had the whatever, you know, to call up and say, hello, hi, this is Benny, whatever. I go, I'd like to audition for your band. He goes to me, first of all, how do you know I'm looking for a singer? My singer happens to be moving on. He was doing 50 stuff on the road. He goes, you any good? I said, well, people think I'm good. He goes to me, well, what do you look like? Do you have any kind of a weight problem? And at the time, I didn't. At the time, I kind of
looked
like...
He really said that? Is anyone kind of a weight problem?
Well, he had an image.
Right.
So he wanted everybody to look really good. So I looked like Donny Osmond back in the day, right?
So you look like Donny Osmond?
Well, kind of. Kind of a little bit darker and a little more whatever, Italian looking and darker. But anyway, I went over to his place, you know, in Copeg. And he had a
studio. Didn't they have a place in, was it Sunrise?
Yes.
Hall? Yeah, I remember that place.
So I went into his home, and the whole band was there, and I sang half a dozen songs, and they liked me, and I got the gig. But at the time, he was doing a lot of gigs in Brooklyn and Manhattan. He had that all sewed up. And then he eventually came out to Long Island, and he had the whole thing, all the different country clubs. So he was very, very, very busy. And I was working with him like crazy. And then... which is what I do occasionally. I always seem to do something that sabotages my career. I was also studying at the time, right? I had gone to school for 1 year for pre-law. Didn't like it because my brother was an attorney. So it was like, oh, I should become an attorney like my brother.
Yeah.
But it wasn't my thing. I didn't feel like going in and fighting and litigating and all that stuff.
Yeah, but that's why you get married.
Exactly. So, but I like science and I like this. I said, maybe, you know, I like dogs. Maybe I'll be pre-vet.
There's a pre-vet
I didn't program. Know that. So I started that, and my brother said, why do you want to do that? Why don't you be pre-med? So I went. In any event, I went to Italy for a long time. I studied medicine in Italy, and that's what I did. I basically removed, I had this incredible musical thing happening, and then I just like pulled myself, which was very difficult because I was so torn. Because music has always been my heart.
Well, you know what's funny about what you, I don't mean to interrupt you. That's why this podcast was born, because I have a gripe with society when it comes to music, and that is, I can't, you know, I know that people hate that I say
that. No, say it.
I can't stand it. You know, it's like let's just say, I keep saying brain surgeon, but let's just say surgery was something that was entertainment that we saw on television all the time, right? And every day you get to put the radio on and there's some surgery thing going on. And you eventually go, you know, I'm going to buy a scalpel. I'm going to try it out. Maybe I'll just do some, I'll be a surgeon on the weekends. That's the way I view people who who like music, who thinks you can buy? They think you can buy a guitar, and you are a musician.
Right. I hear
you. And that bothers the shit out of me.
I understand that.
I mean, let me tell you something that happened at my kid's school, because I taught band for 32 years.
Right, that I know. Yeah,
and we're in open house night. The teachers are doing their spiels. Mm-hmm. You know, so I go, now this is middle school. My kids both play clarinet.
Right.
So we go to the band room, and the girl's there, she's young, she's a band teacher, she's giving her rap about be having to go to lessons and blah, blah, blah. And one parent raises their hand and says, well, what happens if my son has a lesson during science? Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, well, he'll have to, you know, miss science and make it up, you know, or he'll have to, you know, make it up with me. So she said, well, I would rather he miss band than science. Right. And you know, I could see the teacher got flushed. And like, so there's a
That's
teacher
wrong.
Who went, she went for her bachelor's, her master's, just like the science teacher
exactly.
did.
Exactly.
Right.
Thing.
And she's, and the science teacher, you know what they're doing? I don't mean to speak for science teachers or any other teacher, but most English, social studies, math teachers teach their class.
Right.
They grade their papers and they go the fuck home.
Right.
Right? The band teacher's probably doing a gig night or some other...
There's more dedication.
Right.
I know through my friends who were all in music, like Richie Miranda, he never came home.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm saying is like, it's still got this, there's still this weird stigma.
Yeah,
or this
bad.
Weird, like, you know, it's weighted differently. And it's like this passe thing that anybody could do if they just get into
no,
it. You know
can't.
What I mean? And it's not.
They can't.
You know, I mean,
they
it's
can't.
It's something most of us, like you and I and, right. and most of my musician friends, it's something we couldn't avoid. You couldn't
right.
not do it because it just, it came out of you. It's, you know, it's like it's a career
it's a
that
passion.
It's born inside you.
It's a real passion.
Right,
like Frank
is.
Rizzo, remember Frank Rizzo, trombone?
Sure.
All he
Frank Rizzo.
Whenever I saw him, he'd say it was all about his marching band. All he talked about is the marching band.
Yeah.
I was like,
but at least he had a passion, Frank.
Yeah, everybody was looking at him like, I know, you like the marching band. That's all he ever wanted to talk about. He was like, all right, dude, we know you. But he was so in.
He
and
was.
His marching band was probably phenomenal.
I'm sure
but
it was.
But after a while, we were like,
Frank was funny.
Dude, we know.
He was
it.
Funny. Anyway,
great.
I didn't mean to interrupt what
no,
you,
no, no.
your train of thought. I just, that's the thing that pisses me off.
Yeah.
About the public. The,
yes.
I'll go to, this happened about 2 years ago, and one of my kids' teachers was there and had neighbors who had a band.
Right.
And I didn't know any of these people in the band.
Right.
And I go to a bar outside, nobody's drinking, and, you know, everybody's drunk and whatever. And the band
right.
is terrible.
Right.
And you know, everybody's coming up to me going, what do you think of these guys? And I'm like,
and you don't
oh
want to
my
say they suck.
God, what am I going to say?
You don't want to say it.
You can't, yeah, I mean, and but yeah, it's, you know, it's like.
No, I've been there many times. Like, you know, like I live in a community now, and there's always musicians or whatever. They think they know how to play a little bit, and they get together and they play in the clubhouse, and everybody looks at me like, wow, you know, what do you think? And I don't even, but, you know, by the way, this is between us and the world is listening. No, nobody knows where I live that I even do this, you know, because
they don't know you're a musician.
They don't know I'm a musician. No, but they all they know is that I work for a hospital and I do what I do. But I don't want them to know because I don't want to play in the clubhouse.
Right.
Because then you got, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to ask my guys to come and play for free because these guys play for free, you know. Because that's what they should
yep.
be playing for. Because they're yep. having fun.
Oh, well, a lot of musicians are playing for, as far as I'm concerned, playing for free right now.
Yeah.
For some reason, the club owners just decide, all right, it's $10 a man tonight.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah, after all that, after all the practice, I mean, still practice, still
yeah.
have to,
right.
you know, it's never over. You're,
right.
you're never
right.
as good as you want to be.
Right, right.
And
right.
you're getting paid, and they, you know, they can hire some guy who is an accountant who does it on the weekends for $10
right.
an hour.
Right, right.
Or nothing.
Right, no, that's the part that's bad.
It is bad.
And you bring that up a lot with these guys.
I know, I'm a very angry.
No, but,
I'm
but there's something to it. You know, but there are, I know what you're saying, and believe me, I know there were bands when I was doing the whole circuit thing, Nautical Mile and Long Beach and all those places, there would be bands there that really weren't good bands, but everyone they knew, their mother, their father, their brother, their friend, everyone would show up. So they have 50 people there.
Right.
And the club, all
matters.
The club owner cares about
matters.
Is
yeah.
how many drinks am I selling?
Right.
He didn't care. They didn't care about the quality of
it's a,
the
it's
music.
It's a sad commentary. It really is.
But
it
there
really
are other is. Great bands. You know, like there's plenty of great bands out there that do show up and people recognize their
sure.
great, you know.
Yeah.
And they fill up the room. But there are a lot of and bands that really aren't good, but they have a following. I'll put it that
Which,
way.
Which there again, I don't know. I don't
yeah.
know.
No,
I,
no.
Just, I don't know. I don't know.
No, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, look, everybody, it's kind of like the family members kind of like live vicariously, as you might say, through their brother or whatever it is, and they show up and they want to be supportive and whatever the hell it is. But there was one band that I was in, Steel and Dan. You probably heard of it.
Oh, sure.
I was in Steel and Dan for about a year and a half.
Didn't Steve Bright play in that band also?
Yeah.
And
then the guy passed away, which is why.
I had his kids in band. He was at West Islip.
And he was a great guitar player.
He was the dentist, right?
He was a dentist, very successful, but the guy was actually a very talented guitar player. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of the band was really talented people. And again, even in that band, I wasn't singing really much of the Fagan stuff. I was singing like the bluesier stuff.
Yep.
This other guy, John Tobacco, I don't know if you know who he is.
John Tobacco? Sounds like a mobster.
Yeah, no, but this guy is a tremendous vocalist. And a sound guy, and he has his own studio out east, and I've recorded a lot of stuff in his studio. The guy's a brilliant, brilliant singer. It sounded like Fagan.
Yeah.
So he was like the lead guy. I was like a supportive singer in there, and I do a couple of things. But that band, I was just talking about the guitar play. He, even though he was a dentist, he was actually very talented.
Right. He.
But one of the few. Yeah, I know what you're saying. There are guys.
Right, no, there's gradients of this, right? There's different levels of what I'm speaking about.
But I'm agreeing with you. That's a bad thing when people play for free, because then a guy who's dedicated his whole life can't get a gig. Well, you know, Joey and Jimmy are playing for $50.
That's what I'm saying.
And what are you going to say? They suck? You can't say that. So you could actually say that.
You could say that.
You could say it.
So let me ask you something as a singer.
Yes.
I've trashed a couple of singers in these podcasts.
Okay. You can trash
them. Here's another drummer gripe. I was talking about this with Brian. Go on a gig and, you know, especially if you're a sub.
Right.
And it's the singer calls the tune and won't call the tempo.
Yeah, I always call the tempo.
Okay.
Always.
So you're redeeming yourself. You're redeeming some singers. But in general, I mean, not in general.
They don't.
It happens where I go on a gig and they say, well, how about whatever song you want to play?
Right.
And I go, okay, what tempo? And they go, just count it off. And then you count it. And they go, no, it's just slow.
Yeah, well, that's just silly every time. Yeah, I learned that many, many years ago at the very beginning when I was singing. And whenever I'd say that, you know, invariably it wouldn't be where I wanted it to be. So I said, no, just boom. I want it right there, man. Yeah. Right there. Shuffle, whatever.
Yeah.
That's where I want it.
Yeah.
And then it just eliminates. And also the pressure for the drummer. The drummer, the poor drummer, he plays it where he thinks it should be. No, too fast, too slow.
It's always too something. And I used to always say that in Sean's band. I used to sit before every tune. I'd say, do you want me to count this too fast or too slow?
It's not fair. No. It's not fair to you.
So actually, the guy who replaced me in that band was way smarter than me, because he was like, fuck you. He didn't say fuck you guys, but he was like, he brought a metronome. And he had, I don't know how we did it, but every tune was clocked, and this is where it is. And that's smart, because we used to do some stuff with a sequence,
right?
And I would play on the sequence on certain gigs, and I'd say, oh, this sounds fast to me or slow to me. And I'd gauge my own self by how I felt on the sequence, because the sequence was right.
Right.
You know, I mean, so it's how you feel that day. You got nine guys in a band.
Right, right.
Everybody's feeling tempos different ways. Somebody had coffee, somebody didn't.
Not only that, you're thinking of it bluesy, you're thinking of it whatever's in your head at the time, because I think of songs, but I know where it's supposed to be.
Right.
You know, I always try to do the original.
Or since you're the singer,
right,
you determine where it's going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be.
I agree.
I'm 100% in agreement with that.
Okay.
By the way, Brian's a monster, that kid.
He's great.
I always watch Daryl's house?
Daryl's house, yeah.
And I'm impressed by the way he's
plays
everybody's back. You know, Joe Walsh walked in one day, and I'm like, Joe Walsh? You know, Billy Gibbons, and he's like, this guy's playing that guy perfect.
Yeah, he was telling me he's got two of his other brothers play drums.
Yes. Kevin was the one.
Kevin's a great drummer also.
I don't think I've ever worked with Brian, but I'm pretty sure I worked with Kevin years ago in different bands. I mean, I've been in a dozen club date bands and a lot of rock and roll bands and R&B bands. Oh, my thing, people always ask me, in fact, people tell me, they say, you know, Ben, what separates, not separates you, but what makes you different than other singers is the fact that I could sing in Italian and Spanish.
Yeah.
So because I sing in Italian and Spanish, I get like gigs and I get a lot of sessions. Like I just did a couple of songs in Spanish that are being looked at by the Disney people. Who the hell knows what's going to happen with them? But they'll, that's nice.
Yeah.
Who's Benny Boombatz? Forget about it. You know, but it's fun. Look, I love sessions. I tell you the truth. The things I love most of all right now are working with people like Richie Miranda, his brother Danny Miranda.
Danny was here.
Danny is, let me tell you about Danny. I don't know if a lot of people.
Tell me about Danny.
You know Danny.
I know Danny.
You know Danny. But let me tell the folks who don't know about Danny. First of all, Danny is not only a brilliant bassist, he's an amazing guitarist. And he could sing. And you could put him in a big band playing Freddie Green.
Yep.
The guy is just a monster musician.
He was born for it. Danny was born for it.
But he could play in any genre. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know. I mean, I saw him with Queen, and he gave me the opportunity to meet them backstage, which was another highlight of my life.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'm looking at Brian May walk by. He's like 9 feet tall. I'm like, whoa, Brian May.
Yeah.
And this guy, and that guy. And at the time, he was touring with the singer, what was his name?
Danny was, at
that time, the singer was that great singer from, All Right Now. What's his name? Remember his name?
Oh.
All Right Now.
Oh, God, I forget.
Anyway. Paul Rogers.
Okay, Paul Rogers.
So he was on, and that guy is arguably the best rock singer that ever lived. I mean, the guy is just an amazing singer. And he's like right there. And so I'm meeting all these people because of a friendship. And Danny acts like...
Danny's very nonchalant.
Big deal
kind of
thing. But anyway, I love him. And whenever he's in town, because he's always on the road now with Blue Oyster Cult.
Danny lives a mile from here.
Really?
Yeah.
So he works with us whenever he can. And then we have a really great drummer, Louis Joya, who's a Weckl guy. Louis's a great drummer. He was Weckl's techie guy, Cartage. You know, they call Cartage. Setup. And he did Cartage setup and some tech stuff for the recordings and for shows. And he knows him since 95. You would love Lou Joya's drumming. He's like, he's a lot like you, but he's like a mix between like Gad and Weckl and a little bit. He's like, it's a really...
Well, Dave was the guy who turned me on to Steve. I went to college in 79. He was there and... I don't know who Steve
with Rosenblatt, phenomenal.
Joel and Dave were there. They were roomed.
Spyro Gyra. I mean, holy.
They lived
Christ.
Together. Joel and Dave, and they lived next door to me, which was who knew.
Spyro Gyra, like, really? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I learned everything from those two guys.
Yeah,
at UB, everything, literally everything. It's funny because I was hired by Gus when I was like 16 years old.
That
I couldn't even drive.
That I know, yeah. Your dad was great.
My dad
Your
used
dad
to
loved
me.
You so much.
I know.
I mean, I used to sit at the table with... Sometimes I was invited to Gus's, you know, like, hey, Benny, come over. You know, Denise made some pasta for Zool.
And
I go over, and you were there one time with your dad, and your dad was looking at you like love.
My dad was very supportive, and... he was the one that made me audition for Gus, but I wasn't ready. I was 16.
Right.
So Gus let me go after about 2 months, and it was really hard. I had a hard time with that.
Right.
And then 2 years later, or a year later, I left for college, and my growth as a drummer was like crazy because of what I was exposed to.
Right.
And I got there, and I thought this is the way college was. Like, I thought you go to college, and these guys that are head and shoulders above you, but it was not. I mean, all the guys were like Dave.
Right.
Everybody was great. Right. And I just thought I sucked. You know, and it brings your playing
but
up.
But you didn't suck. You just had
I think
a,
I did suck. You know, yeah. I was like, at that point, I didn't know what I was doing. And I learned literally everything from being at that school.
Well, you always kept a tremendous pocket. I remember with Gus, nobody ever had to worry about the time. The time was always perfect. And
there was one time I was talking to Sour and Dazzle. I did this about 2 weeks or a month ago. And there was a gig we were on with Gus. And it was a break, and I was late. And I was never late going back, but I was late. The band was playing without me, and Sal was playing drums. So I ran up there, and I got behind. I took the sticks from Sal, and I started playing. And then Richie said, "Oh my God, what happened to the time?"
Yeah, Sal. You know, I actually remember the night when Sal left the
Sal's
band.
Last gig. I think I was on it.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, very emotional.
It was.
Man. Everybody was crying.
Because he was in the band for a long time.
Everybody was crying.
He wasn't just a trombone player. He did a lot, you know.
Brilliant musician, beautiful man, supportive. I loved Richie Scolo, but he would like, I remember one time, Gus goes to me, oh, wow, Benny, I need a trumpet player for next Saturday night. Do you know anybody? And I'm not going to mention the guy's name because he'll be very upset with me. So I called up a guy who worked with the guy was great. He worked with Count Basie.
A trumpet player.
Trumpet player worked with Count Basie and other bands. He worked with Buddy Rich and Basie.
Mm-hmm.
The guy could play. The guy was a monster player, but he had developed an attitude over the years, like, you're like, you're lucky if I take it out of the...
Trumpet player with an attitude.
You're lucky
What's
if I take
that,
it out
man.
Of the out of the case. So he comes to the gig, and you know, they had charts for everything. They wrote up the charts, and...
Who did, Gus?
No, well...
No, Richie and...
Yeah, the other Richie was writing charts for them. Rich Iacona, I think he wrote a bunch.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So he wrote... So they had some music there, right, for certain songs, and... This guy, I don't want to mention his name, refused to read the chart.
Mm.
Well, after the set, I thought Rich Scola was going to kill this guy. You, S-O-B, what is wrong with you? Why didn't you read? I didn't feel like it, he said. You didn't feel like it. And well, let me tell you something. Scola went off on this guy. And Gus at the end of the night said, Benny, what did you do to me? You told me the guy was good. I said, the guy worked with Basie and Buddy Rich. What do I know he's going to show up and he's
you got to be a certain musician.
You got his drawers in a bunch.
You
got
to be a certain musician to do club dates, even though
in other words,
he was too
yeah, good. It was beneath his whatever. So, and boy, I was embarrassed. And I even went to the guy, I go, why did you do that? These guys...
Yeah.
They think I worked with this.
I mean, that's part of the gig, right? Is being approachable and reasonable, and you can't just be great.
Yeah.
You gotta play. Forget people want to have to like what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean,
like
it's an
you.
Ensemble. It's a section. It's a section, right? And I made a mistake that night. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
But it's been great. It's been a journey. Actually, let me tell you the first thing that happened in my life, which is why I became a singer. Okay, my sister, her name is Lena. She was, and she's 15 years older than me, and she was in a band in the 1960s called the Imaginations, and her name was Darlene Day at the time, and she made some records, and they used to rehearse at my house, a doo-wop thing. I literally thought my head was going to explode. I was like 3 or 4 years old, and I see these adults, 6 adults with unbelievable voices in front of me. I was like, it was too much. I couldn't even process. So anyway,
your head was going to explode in a good way.
In a good way. Okay. Like, I couldn't believe what I was listening to. And that's what, like set the spark in me. And she should have been a star, but my father wouldn't let her go on the road because she was doing all local gigs, you know, all these restaurants and things, and she was working. But she literally sounded like Barbara Streisand and looked like Natalie Wood. She was like the package.
Wow.
And this guy, his name was Doc Pomus. Look him up. Google Doc Pomus. P-O-M-U-S. Was a guy who was writing musics for the Shirelles and the Ronettes. And he was writing all this music. And he told my father, he goes, listen, your daughter is a star, but nobody knows it. I'm a songwriter. We got the songs, and he was also working with the guy that went to jail. What was his name?
Went to jail.
No, remember the other guy who was famous who worked with the Beatles? Another sound guy, producer. You know what I'm talking about. I think he shot somebody.
I don't know. Who?
Yeah, what the heck was his name? He used to do sessions for all the big stars. Kind of a quirky guy. Pacino played him in a movie. What the heck was
his name? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
I don't know.
I'll think of it later. But anyway, he was working with him, and... And he even told my sister, he goes, you know, I got to be honest with you. If I see a good-looking boy, girl, or boy, and they could sing a little bit, I can make them a star, you know. He goes, I just got to give them the right songs, put them up in front of the people, dress them up. But he says, but not you. He goes, I don't have to do anything with you. I just got to give you the tunes. So this guy called repeatedly to my house, and I hear my father on the phone. She's not going anywhere.
Yeah. What the old Italian stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was like, my father was a Teamster, truck driver.
Yeah.
Maybe that's enough. And the guy was like, I want to manage what? What are you going to manage?
Yeah, that was like old school. Yeah, there was different.
What are you going to manage?
They treated women differently.
You know, what are you going to manage? You a wise guy? I don't know. Mr. Whatever, my last name. Your daughter is phenomenally talented, and I want to give her an opportunity. I have a show that I'm taking to Vegas. He had like that guy Avalon, whatever his name was, Frankie Avalon.
Frankie Avalon.
He had a stable of singers that he would take and put him in shows, and my father wouldn't let her go. And
yeah.
My sister, I remember I was like five. My sister was crying, and my mother was pleading with my, she's not going anywhere.
Yeah. That was the old, my father was like that. He treated girls differently.
To this day, I feel bad about it. But it wasn't meant to be. You know what? It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
I guess you might say. But anyway, that was my first experience with music when I heard those guys. One of the guys in that band, The Imaginations, wrote a song, Montego Bay. It was a hit.
Oh, Montego Bay. I know that song.
One of the guys.
That song, Montego Bay. Oh.
Yes, that's yes. Okay. One of the guys in that band from Belmore actually wrote that song, made a lot of money from that song. But they were good because they went on to work in Vegas, and they would do shows all over, and they would get on like the compilations, you know, the 50s and 60s compilations.
Yeah.
And she, I think she got a few bucks for some, because she recorded half a dozen things.
Yeah.
But that was my thing. And then I went on to do chorus. Oh, this is important. I was always in choir and chorus from elementary school through high school. That's where I learned how to sing properly. That's why to this day I've never blown my voice mm-hmm. out, because you sing from the diaphragm. You have to learn how to sing from the diaphragm. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've never hurt my vocal cords.
You're the only singer I've ever known who can say that.
No, I'm saying because I know how to sing properly.
Yeah.
You know, I know how to use head voice. I know how to use falsetto.
Right.
I know how to use my voice, because I'm not gonna do like what Michael Bolton did. By the way, Bolton was phenomenal, but I was always like, man, that guy's going to blow himself out. Because every song he was such a great singer. And at the end, he was like screaming.
Yep.
He ended up getting nodes, and he needed surgeries. And when he finally came back, he was singing everything a step down.
Right. Well, a lot of singers do that. It shows, right? They sing. Yeah. They don't sing the original key.
Like Elton. But you know what? Elton, when Elton sings a step down, he actually sounds better. Yeah. I like him. He's really soulful. And Billy Joel, of course, dropped everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, through Phil Grande, I met people like Richie Cannata. I met Steve Holly, who was the drummer with Queen, with Wings and with Elton. Mm-hmm. I met him. The first time I heard him play drums, I was like, what? He was like, I'm like.
There's so many good drummers. There's a lot of good drummers.
Yeah. And, you know, I met him. And so you meet, you know, I've been very fortunate in that I met people through people.
You know,
I was never the star, but I always like worked with them, kind of like a supporting guy, like Ben, Almost Famous Phillips. You know, kind of.
What do you think about, you any views on the state of music right now? Because it bothers me a little bit right now.
You know, I'll tell you the truth. Whenever I do a gig now, and I work pretty frequent, I do like two gigs a week. I could do more.
Who are you doing gigs with?
Richie Miranda on keys. So I have a duo with Richie.
What is it? The gig you were telling me about,
right? It's called New Image Music, New Image Duo. And when I work with Danny, then it's New Image Music, and with the drummer. But I'll tell you the truth. Richie is such a phenomenal.
It's a duo, you and Richie?
Yes. He's such a great keyboard player, and he also knows how to, you know, like incorporate, probably not good for you, like sound, like drumming, and he has like the best
equipment.
Yeah,
fuck him, no drums. Stick to the keyboards.
He has the best equipment for like, you know, beats and drums.
Yeah.
So we work all the time. And in fact, we refuse most of the stuff we do. We only want to do like country clubs.
Just duos.
Right, duos. We do country clubs and we do restaurants. And another important guy in my life is a guy named Jack Morelli. Jack Morelli is the best agent. If anybody out there needs a good agent, Jack Morelli, Morelli. He gets me all the country club gigs and restaurants. And his son is a famous guitar player, Jake Morelli, who tours with Bruno Mars and who married Questlove's sister. Imagine that.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's married to his Questlove's sister, so he's kind of like in the
He's loop. In that circuit.
He's always a songwriter, producer, and so Jack, but anyway, getting back to Jack, he's a straight shooter, you know, all this stuff. His brother was the Jack's brother Bobby was the VP of Sony Records, and I just met him last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky.
So answer my question about the, what do you think about the state of music?
Well, I always say the same thing. Whenever I sing a song, I go, folks, I'm sorry, we just don't write them like this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, right? Like, I don't even know. I can't listen
to anything.
I don't listen to anything. It's upsetting.
I try.
You know, when I listen to stuff, my friend Joel lives in Rhode Island.
Right.
And I go to his house and he's always got some. He always turns me on to some stuff to listen to, and it keeps me going for a while. But then I used to just like listen to, you used to like certain bands or whatever, and I don't, you know, like I like, people say that, like, what do you listen to? Like, I don't know.
I gotta be honest, the best stuff now is probably like in Nashville. A lot of the great musicians that I know, one guy used to work with Edgar Winter, a guitar player. A lot of them went to Nashville, and they call it rock and roll, but it's rock and roll with a twang, you know? Yeah. They have that twang, but it's still rock.
I know that's not your bit. It's not.
There's really nothing like that anymore. I mean, the only thing close to R&B is some of the rap with it.
But like I said, so
people, but there's nothing happening.
But nobody's like writing.
No.
Unless, I mean, like once in a while, I'll make an effort. I'll go on Apple Music or something, and like, they used to have this thing called, I don't know, new artists or something, all unknowns,
right?
You know, and you'd hear some really good stuff, or sometimes I hear a song in a movie that I like, and I look up the artist. But there's those people are not making money.
No,
I mean they're not, right. You can't. It's impossible to make money from even if you have a hit.
Now, the biggest thing now is Taylor Swift, who what?
Right. I don't.
I'm not a
whatever. Okay.
I know she's very talented and. And she's successful, so I bow my butt. That's not my thing.
I couldn't even name one song with the Taylor Swift.
No, I don't know any.
I think my daughter could, but I don't know any of her
songs either. I mean, once in a while, like once in a blue moon, you'll hear a song that you say, "Wow, that's a nice song." You know, but they boom. There'll be a good song, and then
I remember though, like list buying an album and like liking the whole album.
Yeah,
I don't think that exists anymore.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
It's you just like I don't know. I don't know what's going on with music. No, honestly, I don't. No. I mean, my kids listen to stuff I've never heard of. It just doesn't sound like anything to me. And then these days you don't know who's playing what and who's really doing what in the studio. You know, it's the studio is like so ambiguous at this point.
You don't know who's,
I mean, even me, I get tracks to play on, and I never, like Brian's a better man than I. He could do one take and sounds great. But I'm like constantly like listening to, oh, I hate this two bars and fixing it. You know, that's cheating.
Right.
It really is. But I can do it, so I do it. You know what I mean? But I think everybody does that now. You know, you it's easy to punch in and whatever. Or.
Look, for me personally, there's nothing better than going into a place, playing some music. You got a piano player, a drummer, bass player, and, you know, like the Tony Bennett thing, you know, like when Tony would show up with his piano player, stand up bass, and a drummer.
Right.
And it was like the greatest music.
Yeah.
And then Tony was just.
This was some of the stuff.
Swimming through that's the stuff.
Some of the points that Brian Dunn made, which was, him and I see eye to eye on everything, was the thing that it really is about the feel.
Yes.
Of the music, especially for a drummer.
The drummer's the most important guy. I think even
the general public
listens
and goes, oh, you know, I like that beat. It's not a beat. It's what you like is the way that song grooves.
Well, it's a note. I look at great drummers, they play notes. Whenever you say drummer, it's like a note, man, because like when I'm playing with a great drummer, bing, bang, boom, bing, and it just...
A great drummer to me is a guy what's the word I'm looking for? Who is a team player.
Right.
And that's... Long Island's got this contingent of guys who are not team players.
No.
They're by themselves.
No, that's the problem with some
I don't really... Again, Frankie Nostro, Steve Klein, Brian, my friend Joel.
Right.
I have very few relationships with drummers, because some drummers I can't even talk to. Them. If you walk at... Well, I don't want to... I mean, I've been at... So let's say drum departments of a store, and I always want to get like four pairs of sticks and get out, and I can never just do that. I always wind up with some conversation about cymbals and gear, and I just know what I need here, I just need to get it and get out, and it's always there's this weird mentality of people just want to like discuss the drums.
I
don't want to discuss the drum sizes, is it birch, is it, I don't care anymore, I'm just like not there anymore, you know. I don't even like moving drums anymore. I mean, I just it irks me, you know. These drums, they're mic'd up, they never move from this spot, you know.
Right.
It's just the
way you're working with the new version of Uppercut, isn't that right?
It was Uppercut. Yes. Yeah.
And you took Frank Bellucci's.
Frank's. Yeah.
Frank. Oh. I've worked with him. All right. He's a very interesting man.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see. I don't really know Frank.
He's working with Danny Miranda now. They have.
Oh, is he? With
they what? Have. They have a tribute band now for. Van Morrison.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. They just formed this band. There's this guy. You know, it was funny because Richie went to the rehearsal. Richie Miranda, his brother, went to the rehearsal, and he was sending me like clips of the, and I'm looking. I'm listening to the band. I go, wow, that guy sounds just like Van Morrison. Then I said. Wow, he even looks like Van Morrison. It's like, Ben, this is a Van Morrison tribute band. I go, oh, well, that's good. No, but it's good when you don't, when somebody doesn't have to tell you.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. Boom.
Yeah, the tribute bands, that's a big thing now, right? I mean, it's like so.
Yeah, Belushi's in it, Danny's in it.
But there's so many tribute bands.
I'm not a tribute guy. I'm not a big tribute guy. But I happen to have a second cousin who's the best, Paul McCartney in the world. His name is Tony Kishman, and he was in Beatlemania.
I remember Beatlemania.
He was in Beatlemania, and he also has a show now that he works all over the world. It's called Live and Let Die, and he's my second cousin.
Second cousin
Tony, and he's just a brilliant. I mean, he could play guitar, bass, mm-hmm. piano, ukulele, and sings. And he looks like McCartney.
Looks like him. Right. There's so many great guys that right. are not. That we don't know. I mean, that are not in the mainstream.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't mean guy, just guy. I mean guys and girls. And there's a lot of talented musicians that.
There's a lot of talented people out there. A lot of them. You know what it is? Like one of the. I know a couple of your guests said. I think it was John Scarpula said it. I think Billy Heller. A couple of guys said the same thing, and so it's true. Like for example, horn players. Like when I was going to high school and junior high. They were horn players, but I didn't pay much attention because they, and back in the day it was the Beatles and the Stones, and you weren't focused on the horn players. I knew them, who they were. Mm-hmm. Now the horn players are very important. But anyway, they all say the same thing. Like when, for example, a John Scarpula will do Moving Out. Who is he going to reach out to? He's going to reach out to the people he knows that he respects that sound good. And so they come into the show. And then when it's a gig like Diana Ross, who is he going to reach out to?
Well, that's what they were saying.
You got to be a good hang.
You got to be a good hang.
You got to be a good hang.
And I see Billy Heller made a great point.
Yeah.
The reason why Billy Heller is doing so well is because he treats every gig like it's the gig.
Yes.
And he's a better man than I am. I have to say.
No, I know that.
He puts the time into the gig as if it was a gig. And that's why he's hired. Right, he plays great. He learns what he's supposed to learn,
Billy's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, he takes it seriously, and it's really my hat's off to that.
He's in a great band now with Tony Curcio. It's called Watercolors. It's Tony Curcio,
yeah,
Billy Heller,
right?
Russ DeSalvo on guitar.
Oh, Russ is I know Russ.
Phenomenal player and a songwriter, and this young boy, he's probably 40, 45 years old.
Ah, he's young. Yeah, he's a young boy.
Gross Bard, I think, is a phenomenal sax player that I met when I was working with Steel and Dan. They play Spyrogyra. That's what they're doing, basically. And Billy's just such a sweet, humble man. But all those guys, even like Greg Schlick, everybody you had on they're very humble people, and they're great players.
Greg's probably the most humble guy I've ever met.
Yeah, and he really is. Talented, very talented people, and... But yeah, there are guys who fly under the radar. Like I'll play with a guy. Like occasionally, I'll meet a guy who happens to work on Broadway in the Pit, and the guy's a monster.
Yeah,
but you don't know him because he's not really doing like club dates.
Yeah, that's a whole other.
They're doing shows.
Yeah,
and you gotta read.
Yeah,
you gotta read. These guys are all about reading.
My friend Bill Lanham is still doing shows, but he did Les Mis for forever.
Right.
And he at some point was trying to get me to go and learn this show because he wanted to sub out. His Billy's take on it was at the time, this is 20 years ago, it becomes like second nature, and it's not, it's almost like not playing music anymore.
Right.
You're not, there's no interaction really.
Yeah, they want to get out of it after a while.
It is what it's kind of almost the antithesis of creativity.
You know what a lot of those guys do then? They'll go and they'll work for free in a jazz club.
Yeah, and like, Billy used to, check it out, Billy used to sub out Les Mis. This is now in the early 90s. He used to sub for me on a wedding.
Wow.
He'd sub out Les Mis to do the wedding because it was local.
Right.
And it paid more. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it was different. Right. It was a different thing.
No, it's a whole thing. Look, when you're in front of an audience and you could bring them in, to me, the most important, most of the time, I got to be honest with you, most of the time when I walk into a restaurant, they're looking at me like, oh, Jesus Christ, you're going to loud and you're going to.
You look loud.
I'm trying to talk to Vinny about this thing. And this big guy's up there, you know, with the ponytail, and he's going to annoy me. But we play real low.
Yeah.
And after a while, you see them turning their head. And at the end of the night, they'll say, wow, I really enjoyed that. And thank you for playing so low.
Yeah. Thank you for playing so low.
Like the country clubs. The biggest right. compliment I get is, thank you for playing so low.
Yeah.
So, thank you. You couldn't hear me and you loved it.
All right, so we're kind of coming to the end of our time here, Ben.
Anyway, man, pleasure.
I'm glad you did this. This is my first. No, I didn't really plan to have singers,
right?
Because it's supposed to be drummers, but
right.
It's good because I like to have somebody. You know, I've been like trashing singers a little bit on this.
Well, you know, look, a lot of them maybe they
some deserve to be trashed. Maybe they deserve some drummers deserve to be trashed.
The guys who show up a half hour late maybe deserve it, and the guys who don't know what time it is. Is also a problem.
That's right.
But
yeah.
No, it's a pleasure. Look, for me, music has always been my heart.
Yeah. Me too.
You know, I had, like all of us, you have to make a living. I have kids and everything, and you do what you got to do.
Right.
But I'm still doing it.
Right.
And I still love it.
That's
and
the
I
thing.
Look forward
right.
to it.
Yep. That's
it's
the
a
thing.
Passion.
Just a quick story. You just thought of something. I remember as a kid, my grandmother, my mom's mom, had a stroke. She was probably late 60s or something. She had a stroke and she couldn't talk, but she could sing, which was, it struck me. She could not have construct a sentence, but she could sing a song. Right? So that's a different part of the brain. It's somewhere else in your brain.
I used to do a lot of these nursing homes. I don't really do nursing homes anymore, but I used to do them. And you know, there'd be someone in a chair and this their mother or their sister or son, whatever. And I'd start singing a song, and if they would remember it, and they start singing it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, their family's crying because they haven't heard.
Different part of the brain.
And they're singing the song, and after the song's done, boom.
Again, so back to it, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, like Awakenings. Remember Awakenings?
Yeah, Robert De Niro.
And what an emotional thing
right.
to see
right.
that you tapped in, you got through to them with a song.
Yep.
I mean, how more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, music is the most
really
powerful
is.
Thing in the
it
world.
It is, and you think about it, you hear music every day of your life, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right? You don't.
And it influences you. It sets your mood.
It does. It sets your mood.
If you're driving in the car and you got some nice something on,
right.
and you kind of walk out, hey, man.
Yeah,
how
right.
you
going? It's like smoking
how
a joint.
How you doing, you know?
Okay.
I love you, baby.
Benny Phillip.
Hey, I want to just say what you're doing with this podcast.
Say that because you're on
the
podcast.
No. I don't mean it that because I was listening. I've been listening since the first one, and it's such a nice thing to first of all hear the voices of people that maybe I met 30 years ago, and they're still around and they're still doing it, and you know what? They should be recognized.
Yeah.
For what they, I don't look at myself as someone who'd be recognized. I look at myself who's very lucky,
right.
to have done what I've done and met the people I've met to give me the opportunity to do it.
Absolutely.
But that's how I look at singing. Singing to me has never been something I wanted to really do as a living, but it's something that drove, like my heart.
Right. You don't choose music, it chooses you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing this, and you're very successful, and you're great at it, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
You got a great way that you like... You know, you bring it in. No, you're very successful at it.
Oh,
I want to see this thing blow up.
All right, okay. Hopefully it will. Who knows? We'll see. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, baby.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Bye.